My name is Joey. I'm a grateful recovering addict. First off, I want to say thanks to Austin Recovery for seeing something in my recovery and asking me to come out and speak tonight. Chris, thank you. Everybody else, thank you for being here. It's truly an honor and a blessing for somebody to ask you to come out and speak, because I remember, like, in my using days, you know, nobody gave a shit about me, you know, nobody cared. I didn't have to change my people, places, and things because I didn't have people, places, and things, you know. The only people I knew was whoever was opening the liquor store, whoever had the best dope, you know, whoever would cash my check, you know, 1% places because I didn't have an ID, you know. And that was about it. I didn't have any friends on Facebook. I wasn't in social media, you know. It was funny, my coworkers were talking about, we were talking about gold diggers the other day, and I was like, whatever happened to Anna Nicole Smith? And they go, dude, she died like years ago. And I was like, when did that happen? And they were like, did you not know that? And I was like, no. And it's funny because there's this post that I have saved, and it's like, you know, you're an addict when you misplace things like a decade. And that was me. You know, I'm like, oh, wait, okay, cool. Well, so anyways, you know, my clean date is 10/16/15. Thank you. I'll be celebrating 4 years, you know, in a little bit over a month and a half. And, you know, really blessed. Really, really blessed. Because I never thought I'd get a day. You know, I never thought I'd get 2 days. I never thought I'd get a week. And where I live now is where I did a lot of using. I didn't change my location, because whenever I got clean and I decided to get an apartment, like, I kept getting denied by multiple places. And, you know, when I got denied, the only place that would rent to me was a place where I did all my using. So, like, the lifestyle is constantly in my face. Like, every day I catch the bus at 6:15 in the morning, and, you know, they're still out there using. They're passed out at the bus stop. The girls are still working the corners. The dudes are still picking them up. And, you know, and all I can do is just pray for them, that they find that hope and they find that way out like I did. Like, I was grateful that I found it. Little bit about my background story, how I got here. Started using when I was 15, you know, high school stuff. Met my son's mom when we were 14. She was the girl on the other side of the tracks. I was the Air Force brat. And so we kind of instantly clicked. Like, instantly, my parents didn't want me with her, so that made me want to be with her. And, you know how that goes. I don't have to get into all that. So my first using experience was with her and her family. And now when people ask me, what's your DOC, I hate when people ask me that, because it doesn't really matter. We all have that pain. We've all shared pain. And but now I say self-acceptance. You know, that was my DOC, because I always wanted to be accepted. First time I picked up a drink, first time I picked up a joint, first time I did dope, I just wanted to be accepted and fit in. So anyway, long story short, I got a job offer to move to Austin at a law firm. And we were from a small small Air Force base town in New Mexico, where there wasn't really much anything out there. The closest party town was Lubbock. And so I moved out here, and I moved her and my son out here about 6 months later. After I, like, established residency, and she ended up getting caught up in the Sixth Street life, the party scene, and everything started going downhill from there. Like, all she wanted to do was use and party and, you know, the whole nine yards. While I was still, like, a functioning addict, I still went to work. I was working at a law firm. I still did the parenting stuff for my son. You know, all the whole time, like, we just started just growing apart. The only thing that we had in common was just our using. And so after time went on, there's nothing in my son's life up until I got clean that there wasn't a substance in my body, you know, whether it was, you know, parent-teacher conference, you know, his football, basketball games, always something. You know, I was coaching his t-ball team in and out of, like, the YMCA, you know, doing bumps, vodka in the Gatorade, coaching little kids, because that's how I knew how to survive. I didn't know how to function in life without using. And just things started getting worse and worse, and we started growing apart. The only thing that changed was our using. And the summer of 2012, she got diagnosed with lupus. And if some of you know what that is, it can be a disease that you can live through if you take the precautions, Well, see, she wasn't taking the precautions. She went through a huge depression, and she kept using through it. And, you know, and I was an addict, and I was using with her side by side. And I pretty much had front row seats to watch the love of my life deteriorate in front of my face. And I couldn't do anything about it because we couldn't stop using. Come December 2012, you know, I came home from work, and we started using together. It was a Friday night. I ended up guilting her into drinking with me. She was, like, already asleep. She didn't want to drink with me. But I was like, no, I'm not drinking alone. I had a bad day. You're going to get up and use with me. And so that's what we did. You know, we used all night. And then Saturday, she slept all day. And then Sunday, I went to go wake her up. And she was in the back room. And, like, the whole pillow was just covered in blood. You know, she was bleeding out of her mouth, her ears, her nose. Like, it was just, it was most one of the most horrific sights I'd seen up to then. And, you know, so I called the emergency room, and she was in ICU within the hour, you know. And I went to go check on her the next day before I went to work. You know, God told me to, you know, go in there, see what's going on before I went to work. And I'm grateful that I did, because, like, I went in there, and she was still in ICU. And I was leaving, you know, because she wasn't coherent. She was, like, she was out of it. So I was, like, walking into the elevator, and, like, the nurse was, like, literally running at me. And I was like, she was like, stop, stop, you can't leave. And I was like, who the hell are you? What do you mean I can't leave? You don't know me, you know? And she goes, you need to stop, you need to stay and talk to the doctors. You cannot leave. So I stayed. And they sat me down and they said that she has less than 24 hours to live. That they're giving her blood transfusions and her liver and kidneys are so shot because of the cirrhosis and the lupus combined that the blood transfusion's just going straight through her body. You know, it's not, it's just, they're wasting it. And there's nothing that they could do. Instantly, all I thought about was how I just guilted her in using with me that night. How I remember being in and out of the emergency room multiple times, at least once a month, and them saying, what do you want us to do? You guys are in here all the time. You guys are always coming in here. Her point blood level, alcohol level is like through the roof. You guys are just in here. We can't get on her kidney transplant list. So, you know. What do y'all want us to do? And all I could think about was those doctors saying that. And they kept telling me, get treatment, get her treatment, get her in. And I was like, nah, she's all right, you know, whatever. And it just came to that point where there was just no return. And, the day went on, and it was just like a big blur. Like, come to find out, she made me her medical power of attorney at some point. And then they called me into the South Austin Hospital, and they're like, you need to decide what we're going to do. And I was like, shit, you know. So here I am signing the paperwork for them to take her off life support and for them just to let her go peacefully. And all I could think about was just those shoulda, coulda, wouldas, what ifs. Like, we'd known each other for 17 years. She was the mother of my child, you know. And I just kept thinking about those times that we just could not stop using no matter what. And so later that night, she ended up passing away at about 11:27. You know, I was standing there right at the end of the bed, saw her grasp for her last breath, you know, prayed those foxhole prayers. God, if you just let her breathe one more time, I'll never use, I'll never drink. Please, God, just please, 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 please. And that breath never came, you know, and that's when everything went downhill for me. I remember I went into the sanctuary in the hospital, like I was throwing the Bibles, and I was like, F you, and this, and this, and you know, and I always say now, that night I denounced God for my life, you know, I kicked him out, and I moved my disease and the devil into the penthouse, because that's literally what I did, you know, I blamed God for everything, like, why could you do this to us, why, you know, and I couldn't stay clean after that. Life just kept happening, and things just kept getting worse and worse and worse. You know, I had to deal with, you know, telling my son the next day. I had to deal with Christmas, New Year's. You know, her family pretty much blamed me for everything. You know, so it was just like constant in my face, you know, those thoughts, those memories, those emotions, those constantly blame game, you know, self-pity and all that stuff that just kept me using for the longest time. And then, you know, come February, my mom, she was in remission from Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I got a call from her one night. I hadn't talked to her in a couple days. And it was right about midnight. And she was calling me and she was crying. And I hung up on her. And she called back and left a voicemail message. And she was just like, I wish you would pick up the phone. I love you. I miss you. Take your medicine. Stop drinking. People love you. People care about you. I wish I was there to protect you. You know, I didn't pick up that phone to tell her I love her back and I miss her because I was too busy using. You know, I didn't want to, you know, ruin my high. And found out the next day that she ended up passing away in her sleep that night. And I never got that closure, you know. And then things just kept getting worse and worse and worse. You know, the only thing that got better was, that changed was just my using. And I started losing everything. You know, first I lost the apartment, found myself here, up at the one up north. I can't remember what it was called. Yeah, that one. My first treatment, you know, I wasn't ready. You know, I went in and did my 30 days. I wasn't ready. I just did it because my family told me that was my only option. So after that, I didn't stay clean, but maybe a couple hours. And, you know, I still told my I was staying with my sister, still working at the law firm, still because they put me through treatment the first time. And you know, things just kept getting worse and worse from there. And, you know, I would try to go to meetings, and I'd try to be like, you know, I'd go into meetings and with a bottle of vodka in my backpack and be like, okay, God, let me see you get me clean. Let me see you get a sponsor and work some steps, and let's see this magic happen, you know, and it never came. You know, I was off to the bus stop using. You know, I wouldn't even last the whole meeting. So I found myself in my second treatment back here again. And this time, I was still working at the law firm, you know. Still, I don't know how they were putting up with me. You know, I'd come in, you know, just out of it. And at this time, they decided to let me go. So I was 2 weeks into treatment here, and I found out my insurance was canceled. So the addict that I am, I was like, oh, shit, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cash in my 401k while I'm in treatment. And so that's what I did. So I cashed in a $27,000 check, and I had that in my last check, a $3,000 check, waiting for me in the mail when I got out of treatment, you know. And I lasted clean just enough time to like, you know, shit, shower, shave, and go cash my check. And I was off to the races. And I blew through 30 grand in 6 months. Maybe even less than that, you know, between, you know, all the using, the strip clubs, the partying, all that stuff. None of that did I get my driver's license. None of that did I put a roof over my son's head. Did I do anything productive with that money besides just use it all away. And found myself penniless. My sister kicked me out, you know, living in and out of the hotels down 35. Just doing whatever I could do just to put a roof over my head and keep my using going and going and going. And I found myself one day, at the Motel 6 right there by Old Torf. And I was like, the hell am I doing, man? But I couldn't stop using. You know, the girl that I was staying with was over there, prostituting for the room. And we're up there, you know, just using together. And I remember I took off up 35 to the liquor store. And that's the last thing I remember. And then I remember waking up at Brackenridge Hospital, not knowing how I got there. And they're like, well, Mr. So-and-so. And I'm like, why do you guys keep calling me this name? And they said, because that's the only name that you kept saying that made sense. And I was like, okay, well, that's not my name. So here's my name. And then it started with an N, and that isn't even close. I don't know. But anyways, so I asked them, I said, how did I get here? What happened? And they said, well, somebody called the cops, and you were passed out, and your head was hanging over the curb. And if the bus would have came or if a car would have been riding that curb, you would have been decapitated right now, and you wouldn't be here. And I was like, oh, shit, really? And that was the first, you know, sign of, like, my unmanageability and stuff. And I found myself, you know, a couple months later, my first DWI possession charge, and, you know, nothing changed after that. But that was the process of my recovery, was that. Because after that, I went to OSAR, and I got Texas State funded. And, you know, when they ask you those questions, like, who, like, you know, like, are you an addict? And all these questions, like, do you use every day? And all these questions that they go through whenever you're applying for it. And she gets this question, and she's like, blah, 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 blah. And she goes, have you ever tried to commit suicide? And I was like, no, I would never try to commit suicide. I would never do that to my son. And she goes like this. She goes, huh, And I was like, what do you mean, huh? And she goes, we're going to come back to that question. Hold on. And she goes, did you use every day? Yeah. She's like, you just got a DWI. What'd you blow? A .29. You had dope on you? Yeah. You know what all that you use every day? Multiple times a day, as much as I had. You know, we went down that checklist again. And she goes, and you've had people pass away from addiction, right? So you know every time you take a hit or every time you do that or get behind the wheel, you're pretty much trying to commit suicide. And I was like, shit, dude. You got me. And that's, and you know, I didn't think about it at the time, but then I found myself, my third treatment, and this time it was a little faith-based rehab down in Belton. And, you know, I got Texas State approved for 90 days, and I only planned on staying 30. But something was working in my life that I didn't know was working. And at my 60 days, I pretty much had like 70 days because like I white-knuckled it for like a week and a half. And I got to leave, and like we were in the mall, and like all I could think about was just using. You know, I get in the mall, and there's this Mexican restaurant with this big ass margarita, happy hour, shot special. I'm like, yes, that has got my name written all over it. And all I could think about was using. And then I saw the bathroom over there, and I was like, I know if I go in there, I could get away from my family, convince them to give me some money, and go have a drink, and somebody in here is going to give me some free dope. See, that's how sick my brain is. You know, I'll ask everybody. I don't care at that point because I ain't used in 70 days. And then I was getting my hair cut and my beard trimmed. My son's sitting next to me, and he's telling me about his basketball game two nights before. And I couldn't understand a word that he's saying because all I could do is look at myself in the mirror and think about using. It was like Charlie Brown, like, because all I could think about was using. I could care less what he had to say. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll be the one to the rules where they don't test me, you know, I can go back and, you know, and whatever. But I didn't use through that, and I stayed clean. I went back, and I talked to my counselor, and I ended up deciding to stay for the whole 90 days. And that was probably one of the best decisions I've ever made. Staying for that whole 90 days because I stayed in through the times that I knew I was going to use, through Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, Super Bowl, you know, and I got out like right after the Super Bowl, and you know, little did I know that like all the classes and all that things was really paying attention. I was really listening to it, you know. I stopped being the cool guy, the funny guy in rehab, and I started listening to the H&I. You know, that was bringing in the message, that was bringing it in. I started participating in my recovery for the first time. I surrendered to my higher power, which I choose to call God. I was done. I was all in. I was like, okay, my way ain't working. So let's figure out some other shit because, you know, I don't want to use anymore. And I got out and I did my relapse prevention thing that they give you. I did my 90-90. I went to multiple meetings. I just hung around the meetings. Like, I went to Cherry Creek. I went to Western Trails. I went to Bolden. I just stayed by that library, the taco spot. That's where my taco addiction came in. That's a different story. We'll get to that another time, as you could tell. And I kept doing it, and I kept working because I didn't want to use. You know, the only thing my sister would give me was gift cards because she didn't trust me with money. She'd give me a bus pass and gift cards, and I'd try to sell them, and I couldn't do it. I just found out pawn shops take gift cards. Man, if I would have known that shit, boy, thank God I didn't know that shit. But anyways, so I found myself, and I was doing it, what they told me, the suggestions, go to the meetings, you know, get a sponsor, work the steps, keep coming back, and I just found myself not fitting in. I went through three sponsors, and I asked this guy to be my sponsor. He was going to be my fourth sponsor. I already worked the steps, and this guy tells me, he's just like, no, I'll let you know. Let me get back to you, and I gave up. I was like, well, you know, if this shit's not working, how is it going to work for me? And I jumped on the bus, and I was headed to a liquor store. I was like, I'm done. I didn't want to go use, but I'd given up on my recovery. I didn't see. I was like, if they can't stay clean, how am I going to stay clean? And, you know, and that's not everybody. This is just my experience. This is my story. And I jumped on that bus after the 5:30 meeting, and my phone had died. And I was looking out the bus for the first time. I wasn't on Facebook. I wasn't on YouTube. And the bus stopped right across from Travis High School. And I was looking out the window, and I saw some addicts out there standing out there like smoking. And I didn't know what they were doing, you know. They could have been doing anything, you know. They could have been there for a church choir or bake sale. And I got to think, I was like, well, yeah, they don't look like, you know, no church folks. So something told me to get off that bus at the next stop. And I stayed at that bus stop for a good 10 minutes. And something said, go back to see what that is. Go back to see what that was. And I walked all the way across 35, about a 10-minute walk. And I walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And it was just like, it was something different in that meeting that I needed to hear. You know, they bombarded me with the hugs that I needed that I hadn't gotten from people in a long time, that I wasn't getting from my loved ones in my family. I wasn't getting from anybody. You know, this person came up and hugged me, and they wouldn't let me go. And they said, welcome home. And I was like, what? Welcome home? I was like, all right, cool, man. You know, I'll keep coming back. And I picked up my 9-month key tag there, and I met my sponsor there. And today that's still my home group. I've had every service position at that home group since I've been there. You know, and like I say, and I say, God, so now I forgot what I say. You know, God brought me to NA, and my desire to stay clean keeps me coming back, because that's what he did. Because like I said, I was on my way to that liquor store, and I never made it. You know, God stepped in and said, no, player, I got something better for you, you know, and that's what he did, you know. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing. You know, I still get chills thinking about that, because I got up there and I shared who I was. I got honest and vulnerable, and you know, and we circled up, and I tried to skate out, and they grabbed me. And I was like, okay, you know, and they told me, keep coming back. Here's some numbers. Call us before you use. And I was like, I ain't calling them. Whatever. But I found myself keep coming back. Something was attractive in that meeting, so I kept coming back. And I found myself, okay, so remember I told you I had that DWI possession charge? Well, see, I didn't even have a car, and they didn't even trust me to be walking without using. I had to carry this big-ass breathalyzer. It was this big. Yeah. Some people remember because they saw me, and I had to blow in it 4 times a day. And I shit you not, it looked like a drone. It was this big. It was black. It had infrared on it. I couldn't get, you know, if I tried to, like, have somebody else do it, they're like, no, that's infrared. We got you, sucker. And I had to blow in it 4 times a day, 5 and 7, 10 and 12, 5 and 7, and 10 at midnight, you know? And I'm grateful for that machine, because it stopped me from using times that I wanted to use. I never missed once for a whole year, 4 times a day. And I found myself, I was coming back from Ohio, and my family just dropped me off, and my disease played my relapse just like that, just as soon as I passed over the security. They're like, okay, blame it on Southwest for losing your breathalyzer. Tell your work you're still in Ohio. Tell your family that you lost your phone so you don't have to talk to them for a couple days. And I found myself on that plane. I had a layover in Nashville, and I was like, I'm going to go drink. I'm in Nashville. I'm going to listen to some music, and I'm going to drink, because that's what they do. I don't know where I came up with that shit, but I guess just country. I don't know. Anyways, so I was standing at the bar, and the bartender never came. And I was like, okay, what's going on? You know, I'm like, had money in my hand. And she never came. And I played that tape forward. I was like, okay, if you take that first drink, then you're going to take another one. And you're going to take another one. And then you're going to be walking through the airport looking for some dope, and you ain't going to find it in the airport. So you're going to be in downtown Nashville looking for some dope, and you ain't going to find it. And try to explain that, why you need a new plane ticket. So I was like, so I played that tape forward, and I sat right by the entrance to where the plane was coming. And when the plane came, I was like, oh, you know, because I didn't have those numbers on me. I didn't have, you know, I didn't reach out. I sat in some misery. And I said, okay, God, if you get me back to Austin, I'm all in. I'm everything, you know. And so I get on the plane, and I'm like, oh, thank God, you know. I got my literature out. I was reading it, and it was the red eye back to Austin. And this young guy comes and sits next to me, and he's ordering gin and tonics the whole flight home. talk about powerlessness. You know, I even asked late. I said, "Can I switch seats?" She's like, "No, it's a full flight. You should pretty much sit your ass down and shut up." And I got back, and I kept, and I went. I asked my now sponsor to be my sponsor. He's been my sponsor for over 2.5 years. You know, I became of service. Like when I was going to that meeting, they gave me my first service position. They gave me a key to the meeting because they saw something in my recovery that I didn't even see in myself. I didn't even have an apartment key. I didn't have a car key. I think I had a pool key and a laundry key, and I don't even know whose pool or laundromat that was. It was probably someone I came across, and I was probably sleeping or passed out of their pool or something. I was like, but they gave me the key to the meeting, and they said, "All right, here it is. Come here 7:30 or 7 o'clock. Set up, and we're going to depend on you." And when that happened, it was just an overwhelming love that I never felt, that people depended on me, that I hadn't. And, you know, I was still going through that whole, like, I don't know if I'm going to do this recovery thing. I don't know. I was still kind of on the fence. And then I kept coming back, and I kept sharing about the pain and the misery that I was going through and how I wanted to use. Because one of my predecessors always said, "A closed mouth doesn't get fed. How can we help you if you don't tell us how to help you?" And that's what I do. So I go into meetings, and if I'm in pain, I'm going to tell you I'm in pain. You know, if I have a bad day, I'm going to tell you I'm having a bad day. You know, I don't always stick to the meeting schedules or the meeting topics and stuff, because I go to meetings to stay clean. You know, I don't code for all the other bullshit. But, you know, when I started sharing my story and started telling them, being honest, I was getting feedback because I thought I was the only one that was going through the things that I was going through. You know, and somebody, you know, people would come up, and this is what happened to me. This is how I stayed clean through it. This is how I, you know, this is how I have 5 years. This is how I have 10 years. This is what I did. Here's a suggestion. Take it or leave it. That's up to you. But this is what kept me clean. And so I kept using those suggestions, and that's when those days turned to weeks, and those weeks turned to months, those months turned to years, and now I'm almost at 4 years. I'm like, my God, how did that happen? Sometimes I have to pinch myself. Because I always remember my last day using, you know, like I shared. And I remember, like, I couldn't even function without a substance in my body. I remember I was at Whataburger. I couldn't even figure out a push-pull door, you know. And then I got to that liquor store, and I was, you know, captain everything, you know. I probably ran around the block doing stuff. But I couldn't function without a substance. I remember, like, my mornings, like my sister and my son she would drive them off of school. She would go. And I'd take my little chihuahua, and I'd go around the apartment complex looking for change, asking people for dollars. You know, I'd put my khakis on and look like I'm going to work and, you know, the whole mask. And, you know, I'd have about $15 before, like, 9 o'clock. And I would just go, and I would just line up shots and lines and, you know, and just that was how I was living my life, the last of my using. No way for anybody to live. And so now, you know, I'm of service. You know, I follow the suggestions. You know, I go to 4 or 5 meetings a week. You know, I have my 11-step appointments. You know, that's Wednesdays and Sundays. You know, I'm of service there. You know, I'm of service, you know, to society. You know, I've re-signed my third lease. I couldn't even remember doing that because most places kicked me out as soon as, like, as soon as the sheriff pulled up, pretty much. And like, I just remember that. And, like, I don't have eviction notices on my door. I don't open my door and the electric's turned off. I don't get calls from my son. He's like, "Dad, where's my PlayStation again?" You know? his stuff is safe. Well, he just moved out last week, so that's a blessing. Oh. So, yeah. I went to meetings and I shared a ton on him. You know, because that's what I had to do. He's 19, so it's okay. But, you know, it was hard. I was talking with my friend on the way up here, and see, my son grew up seeing what addiction does to us. You know, he saw us using. He saw his mom pass away. He saw me in and out of rehabs. He saw me homeless. He saw me having the nice things. He, you know, he saw me just, like, stumbling everywhere, passed out. He used to, like, find my vodka bottles, and he'd dump them out, and he'd fill them up with water. He'd go through my wallets and find my dope bags and flush them because he didn't want to see me die, you know? And I'm grateful for that kid. He played basketball, you know, up to his senior year. You know, he goes to church with me sometimes. You know, he's 19, so I don't know if he's an addict or he just has lazy tendencies. I don't know. But that's his journey and that's his process. But I'm grateful that he moved out because we were not getting along. And but, you know, I'm sad because I missed out on a lot of his childhood, you know. If you're young and you have kids, you know, be grateful for that, man, because some of us missed out on it, you know, and that hurts my heart every day. You know, I always call my sponsor. I'm like, hey, man, I'm a manager at Thundercloud, and I see families come in, and they're just so happy, joyous, and free, and my emotions hurt. I get sad in my heart because I missed out on that stuff, you know. And, you know, I was talking to this addict the other day, and she just got her kids back. And she goes, I can't make meetings because I can't take my kids to meetings because people will judge me. People will say shit. And I said, who cares? I told her, if they got a problem, tell them to call their sponsor. Because obviously they ain't working the steps right, and they don't have no compassion for you. Because I think single parents need to be in meetings more than some of us do. I don't care, you know, because they are learning, you know, not only to stay clean, but to raise kids, man. I told you, man, my 19-year-old's out. I'm done. And so, you know, if you have kids, if you're trying to get your kids back, man, and you have them, don't let that stop you from going to a meeting. You know, I love seeing people in the meetings with their kids, you know. And sometimes, you know, we step in and we help them with their kids when they need a meeting. You know, some of the women, they'll step up, you know, and they'll watch the kids outside the meeting. Or they'll do stuff, or they'll, you know, it's I love seeing stuff like that, you know. And I always tell people, because I do H&I sometimes too, and I tell people, it doesn't matter where you get your recovery at. You know, my journey's taken me from AA to NA, and everybody's different. My dad, you know, he has 14 years sober in the AA, you know. And just because that didn't work for me doesn't mean, you know, that works for him. And some people have to find that meeting where they identify. You know, it's all about that identification. You know, what you can relate to. You know, so if you don't relate to the noon meeting, go to the 5:30 meeting. If you don't go to the, if you don't identify with the meeting at 5:30, go north. You know, go to NA, go to CA, go to AA, go to wherever you need. Because at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is stay clean, just for today, no matter what. Sometimes I just, like I said, man, I got to pinch myself because I was the addict who couldn't even put $2 in the bus, you know. The only place, like I said, I didn't have to change my people, places, and things because I never went anywhere. When I got on probation, the lady at the DMV, because I had to get a card, and she's like typing up my information because I didn't have an ID card. I didn't have a Social Security card. I didn't have a birth certificate. I didn't have any form of identification. And she's like punching up the numbers, and she's like, you got to see this. And I was like, oh, great. I thought it warrants. I was like, shit, I'm going to jail. She turns her thing around. She goes, you know, you haven't had a valid ID since 2008. And I was like, well, that sounds about right. I mean, I flew under the radar because, I mean, I didn't do anything, you know. Like I said, you know, I cash my check at the 1% places on the east side, whoever would cash it, you know, or I had direct deposit when I worked at the law firm. You know, my beard, you know, was kind of my identification. If I didn't get in there, I'd go to another one. Most times I didn't even go to bars because I couldn't even leave the apartment, you know, and I didn't travel because I didn't want to leave the block, you know. So I found myself, you know, just the freedom to travel. And I've, you know, just in these 3.5 years, I've gone from California, I've gone to New York, I've gone to Florida, I've gone to Ohio, and I've gone over the whole state of Texas. And I've been able to share my story at multiple places. You know, I was just up at a convention in New York, and they asked me to speak at a beginner's meeting. And I was like, you guys want to hear what I have to say? And they're like, yeah, of course we do, you know? And I never would imagine my last day using. If you would have told me I would have been in downtown Brooklyn sharing my story, I said, you get the hell out of here. Wait, let me hit that shit because it's good first, right? And And it's true, man. I'm living the best, you know. We have a thing in our literature that says, lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arise. You know, I'm getting to do things that I never thought would be possible. I never could have done it if I was still actively using, that's for sure. You know, I got to share, you know, I went to Fort Lauderdale, and I got to make an amends to my mom. Before she passed away, she wanted to be cremated. And she wanted her ashes spread on each of the coasts. So whenever I went out to, my sponsor got clean in Hollywood, and I got to go out there with him, and I got to go to Long Beach, and I got to do it out there. And then I got to go to a convention in Corpus, and I got to do it there. And then I just got to do it when the sun was rising, you know, out in Fort Lauderdale. So I got to make that amends to my mom. And that was one of the most beautiful things that I've done, you know. And I couldn't do it if I was still using, man. That's all that stuff is just would have been out the window. I'm truly grateful for the people who have more clean time than me, the predecessors, you know, the people who are working good programs, you know, that tell me that, you know, even on my worst day, I don't have to use no matter what. Even on my best day, I don't have to use no matter what. You know, some people, they'll stub their toe and they need to go have a drink. And I'm like, what the hell is that about? And like I said, I work in the service industry. I'm around a bunch of active addicts, so unmanageable. And I tell them, I always put like a meeting schedule on the bill on the board. And I'm like, come on. And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm here if you're ready. You know, because that's all I can do is just be in the position to help people when they're ready. You know, I'm just truly blessed, like I said, man. And, you know, if you're not excited about your recovery, your disease is excited about your relapse, you know. And every day I get up and I start my day with a prayer, meditation, and gratitude list. And I put in music because music helps me stay clean too. Because I listen to the music now. I don't just like bop my head and, you know, and stuff. And I just feel it because, you know, I'm always one fuck it away from a relapse, you know. I'm always one away, and I don't forget that, you know. It's just like those suggestions, you know, when you guys get out of here, you know, you'll get that relapse prevention thing, and it's going to tell you what to do, man. Just do it, you know, because it's your life is going to be a lot better at the end of the day, you know. Just go to the meetings. Find what meetings you have to go to, you know, wherever it takes you. You know, if you have to change your people, places, and things, if you have to, like, go and find different meetings, you know, find your home group, find a sponsor, work some steps, get phone numbers. Don't file those phone numbers, because that's what we do, is like, oh, we'll call later, and the next thing you know, we're out using, we're off to the wind, and nobody sees us again, you know. Just love yourself. Give yourself a break, you know. You deserve it. You know, we've already been through enough pain as it is. Whether you use for one day, a week, a month, 20 years, man, we all have that understanding, you know. We all have that disease that keeps running through our brains telling us that we ain't shit, that we can't ever get better, you know. And I'm here to tell you, man, you can get better, you know. We don't recover, but we can get a lot better. We're not in those horrors of addiction like we used to be. So, man, I'm going to pray for you guys. I hope, you know, if your clients here, man, listen to your counselors, just pay attention, you know, and just give yourself a chance, you know. You deserve a fresh life, man, you know. And if nobody told you today that they love you, I definitely do. So that's all I got.